InfoWars.com studios. It's The Real News with your host, David Knight.
Welcome on this August 23rd, 2018. I'm David Knight, your host. Today in the program, we're going to have an individual that I've talked to before from South Africa. And he said, when the last time I talked to him, he said, "I'm not leaving. I'm staying here to fight." He's talking about the violence and the murders that are happening and were happening in South Africa, still are happening. And he said he wasn't going to be run out. His family had been there for 400 or 500 years. There's a story here in South Africa that you're not being told about. And we're going to have him give his side of the story. Now, this all erupted overnight as President Trump started talking about the confiscation of land, taking land from people for two reasons. One, you're white, or two, you've got too much of it. This is being done by the black communists, the ANC, in Africa. And it has a haunting similarity to things that are being shaped up here in America in the colleges. Not only the Marxism, but the hatred of white people. This all began with Bill Ayers and the Weather Underground, the Weathermen, the Marxist communists who wanted a violent revolution, but they couldn't get traction by using economic class warfare. And as he wasn't getting anywhere blowing up buildings, he decided he would go into education. He became a mentor of Barack Obama, this Marxist. And of course, it was the Weather Underground and their people who coined the term white skin privilege, which is about all that's being taught in the universities anymore, quite frankly. If you look at the shouting in the streets, that seems to be the only thing they seem to understand. And this guy has had a massive impact. It is a massive movement here in the United States, and I want you to see where this is going to eventually lead if we don't stop this kind of racism and this kind of genocide that is being fomented in our educational institutions from kindergarten through graduate school, but especially in graduate school. So we're going to be talking to him. We'll also be talking to Joseph Farah, who is the CEO, founder, editor of WorldNet Daily, as what they used to call it, and they now call it WND.com. I want to talk to him about the censorship that they're experiencing, just as we are, but in a different form. Nobody has been deplatformed like InfoWars and Alex Jones. Openly banned, and they are proud of it. Proud of that censorship. Other people, they're moving against them, like Breitbart. They shut down 90% of their advertising. Of course, they tried to do that to us, but we're self-funding with your support with the products we sell at InfoWarsStore.com. But other people feel that, and WND has seen their traffic decrease, just as Prager University talked about how their engagement from Facebook was shut down by over 99%, nearly 100%, because of one video. And I played that video yesterday. It was a young woman talking about masculinity, toxic masculinity. So there's nothing wrong with masculinity. There's good masculinity and there's bad masculinity. The characteristics of men can be used for good or for evil, just like any other tool or characteristic of people. And there's part of that video there, if you remember that. It's nothing at all hateful, obnoxious. It was just good common sense and truth and saying, let's try to harness the good aspects of masculinity instead of trying to drive masculinity away. Well, because of that, they had their engagement by Facebook shut down by 99.99%, essentially shut them off. So they can do that in ways, and it, with the exception of Alex Jones and InfoWars, they have done it secretly, quietly, and of course you do notice it. You notice the shadow banning. You notice the banning of engagement by Facebook and so forth. But what is even more troubling is the fact that they would openly say, we're just going to shut down an entire news organization. And as I've said, I have not yet received a single explanation in spite of multiple attempts to contact even humans at YouTube. I keep getting spammed by their bot. I have over 1,500 emails sent to me by their bot, none of which say anything other than, we got a complaint, you're gone, bye. Never had a complaint before from them. So they make the rules, but they don't have to follow the rules. The rules are for the little people, you know, just like Hillary Clinton and James Comey have always told us. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Found Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome on this August 23rd, 2018. I'm David Knight, your host. We're going to have joining us in the next hour, Simon Roche. I've talked to him before. He's in South Africa. He's a white man. He was part of the ANC, actually. He helped them come to power, but he eventually figured out what they were about. And President Trump has figured out what they're about as well. We're going to have Simon Roche on in the next hour. But last night, President Trump tweeted out, I have asked Secretary of State Pompeo to closely study the South Africa land and farm seizures and expropriations and the large-scale killing of farmers. And he referenced Tucker Carlson and Fox News on that. Of course, we have talked about this for quite some time, but perhaps he didn't see that. So President Trump has ordered Pompeo to closely study South Africa's land confiscation. This week, the government there in South Africa, the communist government there, and of course, Barack Obama was just there celebrating the communist government in South Africa. That's what he would like to see happen here. And I'm going to talk to you about the uncomfortable comparisons to what is being prepared in this country for everyone here, because it is the racism and the Marxism, and they go together hand in hand. They can be used and are being used here in this country. What is happening now in South Africa will be the future of this country if we do not change the way our educational systems have been hijacked, as I pointed out at the top of the hour, by Bill Ayers and the Weather Underground, who coined the term white skin privilege about 40-some-odd years ago. And then he stopped bombing buildings and started bombing our children's minds with propaganda so that he could have a race war instead of class war. The class warfare thing just wasn't working out for them, you know, so they had to come up with a new justification. And so they want to have a race war with people. So they have now moved to seize two farms. They've been talking about this for quite some time. Two farms from owners who refuse to accept the government set compensation. And it has triggered panic, not only with the landlords and the farmers there, but also with the banks and the people who are looking at the economy, because they're saying, this is a major part of the economy. They're feeding 80% of the people here, this small group of farmers. And not only that, but if the farmers stop paying on their bank loans, that's going to drive this country into bankruptcy. And of course, this has all been seen before. This is not projection of a theory. This has all been seen before with Zimbabwe. The communist government there did the same thing, and they have never recovered. Prior to Venezuela, Zimbabwe was the poster child for economic collapse and disastrous economic policy, the hyperinflation that happened there. But what happened in this particular case, the government valued the land that they were going to take with one of these farms at $18.7 million. And then they offered one-tenth of that, $1.87 million. And the people said no. And they said, well, we'll just take it then. This is a company that wasn't using it for farming. They were using it for hunting, which is another big part of the economy. A South African state-owned land bank has warned of the massive economic burden for the economy. They said if the farming sector and the agribusiness loses confidence and stops investing and paying off debts, it's going to trigger defaults. It's going to collapse the economy, which is what happened in Zimbabwe. And the justification for this is that white people own 72% of the farmland in South Africa, although they are 9% of the population. This is how it's being justified. And when we look at what's going on here, I would say that, well, you know, you look at America, and it's like the 1% or the one-tenth of 1% own pretty much everything, especially when it comes to the media and the internet, all the big corporations. So it's about one-tenth of 1% that own pretty much everything here in America. So it looks like things are about 100 times more equitable in South Africa than they are here in America. So you think this isn't going to come here under some guise, one way or the other? As they're talking about this, Wall Street Journal report quotes the government. They said South Africa totally rejects the narrow perception that is being put out by President Trump. It only seeks to divide our nation and remind us of our colonial past. And I would say, well, if they want to talk about a colonial past where they presume that this land was confiscated by white invaders who took this from them. It's not the same situation that it was in Rhodesia. South Africa has a different history, and Simon Roche is going to talk to us about that when he gets here. If they're going to talk about people just coming in and arbitrarily taking property from other people, that's exactly what they're doing. Because under South African law, landowners would also have the right to challenge any government action to take away land without compensation in court. So they're going to change that. They're going to change that. South African foreign minister said that Mr. Trump's comments on Twitter were unfortunate and based on false information. And we're going to get a comment from Simon Roche when he joins us in the next hour, whether or not that really is true. Is it really based on false information? New American has a great story where they take a look at the history of South Africa. Was this a case like it was in Rhodesia, Cecil Rhodes coming in and as a colonial power and stealing this land from people, or was it very different? And I think it is very different, and they make that case. And they also talk about what Julius Malema is saying. Not only are they going to take the white farmers' land, but they're talking about killing them, taking their lives next. That's the headline at New American. White farmers' land is to be taken. Are their lives going to be next? And Malema said, we've not called for killing of white people, at least for now. But I can't guarantee the future. And they had in February a vote passed 241-83. They voted to amend the country's constitution to allow confiscation of white-owned land. And they said, of course, well, it's not just going to be limited to land. They might take other property, like homes, businesses, even artwork will be coming soon. This is something that Genocide Watch has pointed out. They've looked at this. They have rated South Africa as being at about round steps 6 and 7 out of genocide process. So I said, you know, the steps 6 and 7 are polarization and preparation. Step number 8 is persecution. Step number 9 is genocide. So where are we in that particular process? I would say we certainly are at polarization now, aren't we? Isn't that what is happening here? We might even be in preparation when you look at what's happening in the universities here in America. But we certainly are at step 6 out of 9 steps before the actual genocide happens, without question, here in America. We may be actually entering into step number 7, preparation. Persecution hasn't started yet, not certainly in the way that it has in South Africa. Some people might feel that some of the laws that are being pushed now by some people on the left are persecution, but I don't think that's there yet. But it said, according to Genocide Watch report, back in July of 2012, over 3,000 of 40,000 white farmers had been murdered since 1994. Malema, however, doesn't think that killing white people, at least for now, is a problem. And I want to play a clip for you that he had at an interview, because the interviewer, when he said that, pushed back on him. I want you to hear what he has to say. Let's run that clip.
I don't know what's going to happen in the future. I'm saying to you, we've not called for the killing of white people, at least for now. I can't guarantee the future.
Yeah, but I mean, you'd understand somebody watching that, especially as it gets shared on Twitter, they freak out. It sounds like a genocidal call.
Cry babies. Cry babies.
I'm not calling for the slaughter of white people, at least for now.
I can't give you a guarantee of the future, especially when things are going the way they are.
Subtext.
Especially if things are going the way they are, there will be a revolution in this country, I can tell you now. There will be an unled revolution. An unled revolution is the highest form of anarchy.
Well, of course, as the New American points out, there is something that he likes that has been created by white people. It's called socialism. He loves that, and he profits from that. But you heard what he had to say. We pushed back, and he said, you're saying at least for now? And he goes, oh, cry babies. They're crying because we're going to kill them soon. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
On the first part of the journey, I was looking at all the
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We're going to have one of our crew who just got back from a mission trip to South Africa. I'm going to have him tell us what he saw there. Because, folks, what this is really about, at the core here, what we're seeing is a racially based revolution, violence, theft that is set there. But they can use anything. The Marxists use anything. We just played for you last week that commercial that was banned by Facebook. And there's a young lady whose parents were Cambodian. She was talking about what had happened there in Cambodia with the Khmer Rouge, a communist organization. They weren't exploiting any racial difference or any difference between people groups there. It was simply the communist, and you're either with us or we're going to kill you type of attitude. We saw that with Stalin. And they don't have to have a reason, but they will use anything that they can to drive a wedge between people. And the reason I talk about this is because, as I pointed out, class warfare has worked in the European sphere for the Marxist. But it didn't work here for the Marxist, Bill Ayers and others. So they turned to racism. They turned to race warfare. And so this is the same pattern that we're seeing happening in South Africa. And I just played for you Malema, who was bragging about the fact that they were going to kill white people. He says, well, we're not talking about killing them, at least not now. And when the interviewer pushed back on it, he says, well, it sounds like you're calling for genocide. He goes, oh, crybabies, crybabies. Yeah, we're not doing that yet. We're not doing that yet. But he has done very well for himself, as all of these socialist leaders do. He's got a very lavish lifestyle, as they point out in New American. And he does love, now, this is a great observation they had. He loves at least one white invention, and that is socialism. He has embraced that because that is his ticket to ride. His ticket to ride roughshod over everyone, both white and black, because that's what happened in Zimbabwe. It always happens that way. Once they get rid of the white people, they're going to come after the black people as well. This isn't about white versus black. This is just an excuse that they're using to get their power, an excuse that we're going to see used here in America as well. As Genocide Watch pointed out, and as I point out here in New American, it's hardly a right-wing organization. But they said the murders of Afrikaner farmers and other whites is organized by racist communists who are determined to drive whites out of South Africa, to nationalize the farms and the mines, and to bring on all the horrors of a communist state. So they're organizing against the white people there because the white people are the ones who have economic power who could stop them, and they want to take what they have, which is property and power. And so they have to destroy these people. That is what is happening here in the universities here in America. I got another video, though, I want to play for you. Another one with this guy who just said, well, we're not calling for them to be murdered, at least for now. Well, he is actually doing it now. He's got a song that he sings. They sing at their rallies. It's called Shoot the Boer, which is actually what they call people who are of Dutch or Huguenot descendants who colonized South Africa. It was declared hate speech. So they modified the lyrics slightly. Instead of shoot the boar, they say kiss the boar. And yet you can still hear them saying shoot to kill, shoot to kill. Let's play a little bit of that clip so you can hear that song.
Shoot to kill, Kumasa. Shoot to kill, Kilame. Kiss the poor, the farmer.
Imagine, as you're listening to that, imagine if we had a white political leader, as they point out in New America. Imagine that we had a white political leader anywhere talking about the black population that way. You know, kill the blacks. Jumping up and down on stage. Or pick any other ethnic group. Kill the Asians, kill the Hispanics, or whatever. Can you imagine if you had a white leader doing that anywhere about any ethnic group in any country, doing what this guy's doing, Malema? That's why I say that it's okay, because this is not a scandal in the American mainstream media. Not a scandal when this happens. It would be a scandal, of course, if it was a white leader saying that about any other ethnic group. But it's not a scandal when they do that with white people. This is why I say we are already at step number 6 and maybe step number 7 on the 9 steps to genocide. Polarization and preparation. People have been prepared to accept the fact that it's okay to say that you want to kill people because they're white. That's fine. Not a problem. It shouldn't be fine. It shouldn't be okay to say that about any ethnic group, should it? And they make a very important point in this article from New American. They say, most people would never guess it, but the arrival of whites in South Africa dates back further than that of the ancestors of many of the nation's blacks. The first Dutch settlers landed on Africa's shores in 1652. They've been there almost as long as the Europeans who came here to America. While many blacks in South Africa arrived later. After all, since life in racist South Africa, quote unquote, was vastly preferable to that in surrounding nations, it was attractive to black migrants. So South Africa's black demographics have increased 920% since 1913. Think about that. About a tenfold increase in the number of black people in the last 100 years in South Africa. The main reason the nation's population increased from 6 million a century ago to 52 million today is that the white demographic only increased by 3.3 million during that period of time. That's why they're only 9% of the population. Do you see another pattern that is establishing itself here? The fact that you had massive migration, forget about the color of skin for right now. Okay, you got different cultures, different nations, different tongues, different tribes. As I pointed out, for centuries, you know, they went there in the 1600s, and for centuries you had the Boers, the Afrikaans, who had their area. You had the Zulus who had their area and so forth. This all began to be an issue once it became a modern nation state. And this is something that really happened in the 1800s, and it happened everywhere. It happened here in America. That's what our Civil War was about. We used to have, as they pointed out, even in the Ken Burns documentary for PBS, it used to be the United States are. After the Civil War, it became the United States is. It unified us. Same thing happened at exactly the same time in Italy. They had a civil war, industrial versus agrarian, centralization versus decentralization of many different power centers. Italy had long been ruled by many different nation states. You had power centers in Venice, in Rome, in Milan, in Florence, many other areas. But they combined that as part of that civil war that happened in Italy at exactly the same time as our civil war in the 1860 to 1865. Happened at exactly the same time. And it turned it into a modern nation state. Same thing happened in other countries in Europe. Same thing happened in South Africa. Once that happened, then the black South Africans started to see themselves as part of that nation state and say, well, you know, we are 90% of the population. You're only 10% of the population. And apartheid was a bad way to address that. But nevertheless, now what we see here is a situation where you had people flooding into a country where there was no massive immigration. And then they find themselves as a very small minority. Now these people are saying, well, I think this country always belonged to us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
Waging information warfare against pushers of fake news. Listening to Real News with David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. As I said, we're going to be talking to a farmer from South Africa in the next hour, but I wanted to lay this foundation, especially because President Trump talked about what is going on in South Africa, asked Secretary of State Pompeo to look into it, got pushback from South Africa. But I played for you the things that the radical Malema was saying. His party is the EFF, the Economic Freedom Fighters. And they are pushing the ANC Marxists. So they're the more radical Marxists that are out there pushing for a race war. Not only pushing to take the land, but pushing to take the lives. This is the sort of thing that always serves them, to have this kind of conflict. But at its heart, it's not even really a racial issue. It is Marxism at its heart, where they will use anything to take what people have and to put themselves in power, take that and give it to themselves. And I want to talk to Kyle, who is one of the people involved in the production of the show here. He just got back from South Africa. He went there on a missions trip. And I want to talk to him a little bit about what he saw there in terms of just the general environment. Thanks for joining us, Kyle. Give us your impressions of what you saw in South Africa.
Thanks for having me, David. I spent this last month, I spent about nearly 2 weeks in mainly in Johannesburg, South Africa. And that was my first time over there. I have lived abroad before and traveled quite extensively throughout my life. But it was a very eye-opening experience. Seeing the prevalence of social Marxism and the indoctrination of college students there. And don't get me wrong, when I was in college, I had my fair share of indoctrination being at a liberal arts school. And
it's a universal thing. Everybody that goes to college anywhere in any Western country, and of course South Africa has been a Western country in terms of its outlook. They've suffered from the same kind of cultural Marxism that we have here in this country. That's why I say it's very concerning to see where this is headed. I think the same thing's going to kind of happen here. But what did you see there in South Africa with the college students? Pretty much the same thing you see here with college students in the U.S.?
Yeah, I sure did. One thing I noticed, you kind of touched on that earlier in the previous segment, was the normalization of just these broad sort of stroking ideas that don't have a lot of root in factual evidence, and that have just been kind of spread as these just overarching umbrella ideas that the university students have been told over and over and over to the point where they believe them. But I found that after I engaged in conversation that you could read the body language of the individuals, and many of them were guarded or defensive. But after they had a time to express these social Marxist ideas, that then they began to question whether or not they actually believed them themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Because, again, it's this idea. This is why they have to control social media. It's not enough for them to control the universities. They have to now get out into social media. Because even when people are in the universities, but especially after they get out of the universities, they start talking to people. They start comparing notes. And they start looking at reality. They start getting a little bit of a glimmer of history and of facts. And it's like, I think we've been lied to. As a matter of fact, I've got an article. I've had it on my desk here for a couple of days. A guy who was involved with testing water supply of many different places. He said, we were telling everybody their water supply was safe. And he goes, now I've been made a liar. He says, I'm so upset with this system because we were lying to people. And I was a part of that. And people start to realize that. So it's important for them to control the narrative, because no matter how false something is, as I've pointed out before, with both the Milgram and the Ash experiments of the mid-20th century, they proved that if you've got people in authority telling you one thing, even though that you know that it's factually wrong, you know that it is morally wrong, you can get them to just follow orders. We saw that in Germany. That's what the Nuremberg excuse was. But they proved it, that it transcends, not a German thing. This is transcends all people groups. Anybody can be subjected to authority and do the wrong thing, things that they know that are wrong, that are immoral. And the same thing is also true of peer pressure. The Ash experiments, where they said you give somebody an obviously wrong answer. The crowd is giving the obvious wrong answer about which line is longer or whatever. And most people will go along with the crowd, even though they know that that's not the case. They don't even give them a question where they have to add 2 plus 2 and get 4. You don't have to think about it. They're just shy. Which line is longer? Oh, well, the crowd says this other one is longer, even though I can see it shorter. I'll go along with that. And that's really what you see there, isn't it, Kyle, with that kind of group thought, that kind of group pressure?
Yeah, you're exactly right, David. And the real risk that I saw was just the polarization. And that was the thing that was the hardest thing for me to accept, was seeing that this country historically has had to deal with these issues of integrating all these different people, the Zulu, the Xhosa, the Swazi, the Afrikaans, and many different groups and languages and a whole lot of culture. And they've made these strides, and then to see the country reverting back because of ideologies that are just being subjugated to the college students and to the masses. It's a it's kind of a scary thing, and it's a scary time, not just for the farmers, but for the future of that country as a whole.
I'd say that's kind of like the another parallel to our country, where we used to pride ourselves on being the melting pot that could take the best of all these different cultures that were coming in here. And now what is happening is these cultural Marxists like Bill Ayers are taking these varieties of cultures and ethnic backgrounds, and they're using it to tear this country apart. And the same thing has just happened in South Africa, hasn't it?
Yeah, you're exactly right, David. I found that that my methodology was just to listen, to go in as an outsider and to ask questions and to allow them to explain their ideologies and their backgrounds. And usually what tended to happen, even if the individuals were at first defensive towards me being a white man, I was actually told by one individual who's a South African white man, he told me, "Kyle, when you go into South Africa, be prepared to be treated as a doormat and to accept your role as such."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, that's what we're seeing in universities now.
Yeah, and I found the majority of people to be open after I was willing to listen to them, but there was a state of closed off, and some barriers were definitely there that I had to work through while I was there in South Africa.
You're talking about being prepared to be treated like a doormat. It reminds me of the story that we just had a few weeks ago, where you had this guy who wanted to be so much a part of Antifa. The problem was he was white. And they not only insulted him, but they physically attacked him because he was white. "Shut up. You don't know what you're saying." And he's like, "No, but I'm with you. I really agree with you guys." And then they just brutalized him because of who he was, because of his skin color. And again, this goes back to what Bill Ayer said. They weather underground. They couldn't get a class warfare going here, economically based. So they decided to use racism to start their warfare. And so they came up with white skin privilege, which they've now shortened to white privilege. And talk about your whiteness. You know, when you look at this, this is the way this plays out. Close to where I used to live in North Carolina, UNC Chapel Hill, that just took down the monument to Silent Sam. It was set up as a monument to the common Confederate soldier. They're out there saying, "We want a world without white supremacy." This was something that was put up in 1913 by the Daughters of the Confederacy. They said, "The monument has been divisive for years. Its presence has been a source of frustration for many people, not only on our campus, but throughout the community." That is the chancellor who is saying that. That's not the Antifa people. And the Democrat governor, Roy Cooper, isn't much better. Well, I understand many people are frustrated by the pace of change. I share your frustration. But the violent destruction of public property has no place in our community. So, you know, let's silent right now about cutting the throat of whiteness. Let's just not destroy any public property. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. I have one more thing to say about what's going on at UNC, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. UNC, by the way, for years has had a very uncomfortable resemblance to the ANC, in my opinion. When I lived there, I thought it was a communist organization, and it is now a racist communist organization, just like the ANC. But as we look at what they're going to do in terms of land, because that is what is immediately in front of us, South Africa's white farmers have been trying to sell their land, even though the government is saying, "Well, we're going to take it. We're only going to pay you 10% of what we say that it's worth. And we may not even just pay you that. We may just take it because we're going to change the Constitution to do that. And it's not going to stop with that. We're going to come for your homes. We're going to come for your businesses, even your artwork and so forth. Because everything that you have really should be turned over to us because, you know, you're white and you've got white privilege. And we've got to take that away from you by taking away your stuff." This is just the murdering people like Julius Malema who want to put themselves in power. and then they'll start killing black people as well. As a matter of fact, it's the black farmers who are also concerned about this. They also have an organization. Even though 20% of these farms in South Africa, 20% of the farms produce 80% of the food in that country, and that's what they want to take. How's that going to work out for them? South Africa's white farmers have been trying to sell their land, but they can't because there's no buyers. Why? Because they say, well, we're going to take the land. Why would you do that? Why would you buy something when the government is going to confiscate it? They had in the past been able to find foreign buyers, but none of the foreign buyers are going to step in. Everybody understands what this is. And they're even saying, if you've got more than 25,000 acres of land, we should take that without any compensation. Nobody should have more than 25,000 acres of land. See, that's the Marxism. And that's really what's behind this. Right now, they're using the thin veneer of racism and white privilege to get what they want. But they're really just hardcore communists. There's the people who are privileged. Never give away a privilege as a matter of a gift. And that's why we have to say, we're going to give you the tools. We're going to revisit the Constitution. So now we've got a legal tool to do this. This is the ANC chairman saying this. It's all about privilege, right? You don't deserve that. You don't deserve to have it. You can make that case for anything, can't you? You can always make the case that somebody doesn't deserve it. These comments were condemned by both white and black farmers. The head of the AGRA SA Union, South Africa Union, represents mainly white commercial farmers, said the mood among the members is very solemn. They're confused about the lack of any apparent strategy from the government. Many of them are panicking. Why would you buy a farm if you know the government's going to take it? The National African Farmers Union, which represent the country's black farmers, said the scheme would lead to job losses. The president of the Black Farmers Union said, from a practical and economic point of view, it will not work. He said, we're headed for a state of anarchy if something doesn't change drastically. And we saw this all play out before in Zimbabwe in the 1990s. That country has never recovered from the hyperinflation that came on the wake of the communist confiscation of property in that country, justified by racism. Again, this is Julius Malema, the guy who's saying, go after the white man. We're going to cut the throat of whiteness, playing the song, kill the Boer. He was actually arrested for that at one point in time, but not anymore. Now they're saying his organization, the EFF, is now saying the ANC is dancing to our tune. Yeah, they are. Kill the Boer. They changed it, of course, so they could play it to kiss the Boer. Isn't that nice? Everybody knows what they're saying. They didn't change the tune. Didn't change the incentive. They're still singing in the song, shoot him. That's still what they're saying. So we go from there to what's going on from the ANC in South Africa to the UNC in North Carolina. And what are they saying as they tear down this statue to the common soldier? This is not a statue to any political or elite of the Civil War, not to anybody that owns slaves. This is a statue to the common soldier who fought against an unconstitutional invasion of his country. If you go, again, going back to NPR, the public TV's Civil War series, as Shelby Foote said, the Northern soldiers asked the Southern soldiers, why are you fighting us? They said, because you're here. Why are you here? Why did you invade our country? And so that was what the Monument to Silent Sam was about, a common foot soldier who said, I don't own slaves, but I'm not going to be the slave of Washington if they're going to violate the Constitution. But this is the rhetoric that we're seeing there from the governor who says, well, we don't want the violent destruction of public property. It doesn't have any place in our community. So he's just one step. He can't condemn the hatred that is behind this. But if you want to hear what the hatred behind all of this is, this is one of the individuals that was tearing down the statue said, it's time to build monuments to honor those who have been murdered by white supremacy. Well, if white supremacy and white privilege murdered people, then it's okay to murder those who are white, isn't it? I mean, that's really what he is, the logical conclusion of what he's saying. He is laying the foundation for cut the throat of whiteness. How does that sound? How is that any different from what Julius Malema is saying in ANC? What these brainwashed college kids are saying at UNC. He said, it's time to tear down UNC's institutional white supremacy. Got to go after the whiteness. Got to go after the white privilege. And again, I'll say it again. It was Obama's socialist communist mentor, Bill Ayers, one of the leaders of the Weather Underground, the weatherman, bombing buildings. And he got away with it. Isn't that interesting that he got away with it? He and his wife went into education. And they mentored Obama, and they're mentoring your kids if they're in college. Oh, yes, they've had a big impact on everybody. All about white privilege, white skin privilege. That's what they started with. So he said after the initial skirmish, this is also interesting, they had town and university police officers that were there to protect the statue, try to keep order. But they had a little bit of a skirmish, and then they just stepped aside, like they typically do when Antifa does their thing. They took a hands-off approach, reports a local paper, the News and Observer. They stood a short distance away, and they kept a watchful eye on the protest as they put a noose around the statue's neck and pulled it down to the ground. And then a retired professor came by, Hodding Carter III. Oh, yes, Hodding Carter III. He said, I'm really glad that when it happened, it didn't involve a great deal of bloodshed. So he's really glad that it happened. But, you know, the bloodshed will come later. It will come later. Because that's the foundation that they're laying now. As I said, we're at step 6 or 7. Of the steps to genocide. It's okay to hate white people and everything that they stand for. And this began with Nikki Haley in South Carolina. And so in the distance, what you can hear, as they point out, cars are honking their horns on Franklin Street. People are coming out of the bars. They said it was like celebrating a championship basketball game. And they're shouting, Tar Heels, Tar Heels, Tar Heels. Again, ignorant of what that term means. What does Tar Heel mean? It goes back to the Civil War. It goes back to what Silent Sam was about. The fact that they would stand there and stand their ground as if their heels were glued to the ground with tar. That's what they said. Look at these guys like Stonewall Jackson. Look at this. They're not giving up. They're going to defend their rights. They're not going to become slaves. These people are out there still chanting Tar Heel. And they have no idea of the history. They have no idea of what they hate. But they hate white people. That's exactly what they hate. All right, I've got to tell you about the specials that we have here. And we got, again, a white farmer who's going to be joining us in the next hour. One of the things that keeps us going, and we're going to be talking to Joseph Ferret in the third hour, because his organization, WND, is also under attack, as is Breitbart and Prager and everybody that is telling the truth about what's going on, not falling into the mainstream media and the deep state establishment narrative. Everybody is being shut down in one way or the other. The way that you can support us is with the products that we sell at InfoWarsStore.com. And we got some new specials. We have a new formulation of Ultimate Bone Broth. We got a new supplier, even better ingredients. You can get it now 50% off at InfoWarsStore.com. We also have another new product. We've created something called Ultimate Female Force. You can read about it at InfoWarsStore.com. It is the perfect companion or alternative to Super Female Vitality. Ultimate Female Force is available at InfoWars Store at an introductory price of 50% off, and a special for our audience alone. If you're listening to Real News with David Knight, as I guess you are right now, you can save 20% off of Wake Up America Patriot Blend Coffee and either Original or Immune Support Blend with the code Real News. Just enter Real News at checkout to save 20% off of Wake Up America Patriot Blend Coffee and either Original or Immune Support. And again, that is non-GMO, 100% Arabica bean coffee, and both the Original and Immune Support. Just use the code REALNEWS as our listener. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I've got a lot of interesting news about prohibition. You can believe how many different things are being prohibited in our country. It's not just drugs, folks. It's a lot of different things. Food is on the list. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Remember that time that Obama prohibited incandescent light bulbs? Yeah, I remember that. We could call it Prohibition Light, L-I-T-E, but actually the Prohibition Light, L-I-T-E, began under George W. Bush. He was the one who first started prohibiting incandescent light bulbs. But it was Obama who crushed the things. So he took that prohibition, L-I-T-E, from George W. Bush, and he turned it into Prohibition Light Bulb. And now it is being reversed, apparently by the Department of Energy under President Trump. An Obama administration decision, reports WND, to ban incandescent light bulbs was based on a misunderstanding of the law, says the Department of Energy, meaning that those products that have been used for more than a century may be coming back. And this is kind of interesting because we've had a lot of stories lately, health stories, and this is not something that was planted out there to bring back incandescent light bulbs. They don't have a lobby group out there, but we've known for quite some time, people talked about the fact that blue light makes it difficult for you to sleep at night. You continue to look at your computer and your phone and these other things that put off a very harsh blue light, including your LED bulbs, makes it very difficult for you to go to sleep. It changes your biological clock. We just had another study come out within the last month, and I think it was outside the United States even. I can't remember who it was that did the study. Nevertheless, what they found was that it actually increases your problems that were going to lead to macular degeneration, the leading cause of blindness in Western populations, because it is very destructive to the retinal cells. And of course, one of the things that you can do to counteract that, as I talked about it when I mentioned that study, my aunt, who's now 93, 2 decades ago, she started having the early onset of macular degeneration. She had all the symptoms and so forth. And she started taking nutritional supplements because the retinal cells are constantly being replaced, constantly being destroyed and being replaced. Well, it turns out the blue light destroys them very quickly. So now they're saying that as this began under the Bush administration, they banned certain incandescent light bulbs. The Obama administration just came in and just did it carte blanche, went across the spectrum with it, so to speak. Now they're saying, well, we think that they overstepped their authority. You think? How many times have we seen the federal government overstep its authority? Pretty much everywhere. It's not just light bulbs. We now got people in California passing legislation at the state house. Looks like they're going to ban Bibles. Of course, we've got hemp, which has been banned for absolutely no reason. We've now got Mitch McConnell. A lot of pressure from Rand Paul, the junior senator from Kentucky. Of course, Mitch McConnell is a senior senator and, of course, leader of the Senate majority. Being joined with Ron Wyden from Oregon, saying, let's get kind of rational about this. We can make a lot of money with hemp products. You can buy hemp products. You can buy hemp clothing. You can buy hemp seeds at the grocery store. You can get CBD oil. None of this stuff has anything that's going to get you high. It doesn't have THC that marijuana has. But they banned hemp along with THC. Again, you probably have seen, if you've been around for a while, you've probably seen the old World War II propaganda films done by the U.S. Navy, Hemp for Victory. Yes, we can make ropes out of hemp. We can make all kinds of things out of hemp. Paper, ropes, textiles, and CBD, which is very, very effective at fighting inflammation and pain and many other things. Doesn't get you high whatsoever, but it is banned. And so we have to buy those finished products from other places when we could be growing them here in the United States. That's what Rand Paul has been saying, and he's now got the ear of Mitch McConnell. And Ron Wyden is saying Oregon already's got a robust hemp industry, has 500 growers in the state. But the problem is that they can't get banks to do business with them, and they face criminal prosecution if they ship it across state lines because of the federal government's insanity and because they have overstepped their authority. See, the federal government doesn't have the authority to ban hemp any more than it has the authority to ban light bulbs, any more than it has the authority to define marriage or any number of thousands of things that the federal government has done that they don't have any authority to do. The 10th Amendment makes it very clear. When it comes to the war on drugs, the 18th Amendment made it very clear, too. They had to pass a constitutional amendment to ban alcohol. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Found it. It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. In the next segment, we're going to be joined by a farmer from South Africa, Simon Roche, that we have talked to before. We're going to ask him about what is going on there and to respond from the pushback by the mainstream media as well as the South African government, who are very angry that President Trump is concerned about what is happening to people as the communist government there is demanding that property be taken away from people because they're white or because they have too much of it. Because that's privilege, and we got to stop that kind of privilege. And if they push back, we'll kill them. We're not calling for the killing just yet, but that may happen, they say. Like, we're going to just cut the throat of whiteness, and we're going to see what happens with that. But anyway, we're going to talk to him about the situation there and get an update from him. But as I said at the top of the hour, we have some prohibition that is going away, the prohibition of light bulbs. That was something that was started by George W. Bush. Thank you, Republicans. And it was brought to its logical conclusion with an all-out ban by Barack Obama. So there's not really that much difference. I mean, these issues of freedom between the Republicans and the Democrats, the mainstream establishment Republicans. And then we have the issue of hemp. Now, they sense the commercial benefits of hemp. And, of course, nobody can get high from this. And finally, even Mitch McConnell understands. Maybe he should explain this to his other elderly colleague, Jeff Sessions. For a long time, Mitch McConnell would fight Rand Paul on this. But now he is working with Ron Wyden from Oregon, trying to get hemp removed from the federal list of controlled substances. Why is this in the war on drugs? You can't get high from it. It has absolutely no THC. As a matter of fact, hemp products are defined as having less than 0.3% or lower of THC in them. So you're not going to, it should not belong under any circumstances in the schedule of drugs. But of course, marijuana is there as a Schedule I drug, which says that it has no medical use. We know that that is a lie as well. But who created this lie? It was the United Nations. They created the schedule of drugs. They created an agenda, just like the UN has created Agenda 21 and now the UN 2030 Agenda for Sustainability that's going to be used to take over our cities and turn them into panopticon ghettos to surveil everything that we do and trap us there, limiting our communication, limiting our movement, and tracking us like lab rats. That is a UN agenda as well. But they had one before that. It was the war on drugs. They did it in 1961. In 1971, Richard Nixon dutifully rubber-stamped that with his so-called war on drugs. But it was the UN agenda. And they were the ones who came up with the four classifications of drugs and put marijuana in as a class one drug. And it has remained there ever since. And then they threw hemp in there for a good measure as well. You know, there were some people back in North Carolina when I knew some libertarians there. They would take $1 bills and they had a little stamp that had made for them. And they would stamp next to it. I would never do something like this because I think it's something of a crime to deface a Federal Reserve note. But they would stamp it and you would get this little speech dialogue coming out from George Washington says, I grew hemp, because he did. And he wasn't getting high from it because you can't get high from hemp. But nevertheless, they're saying that this is what Mitch McConnell is now saying. He blames American farmers' inability to meet demand for hemp on, quote, outdated federal regulations that do not sufficiently distinguish this industrial crop from its illicit cousin. Well, yeah, it's outdated, but it's also unconstitutional. See, I'm not for legalizing drugs. I'm for legalizing the federal government because the federal government is an illegal institution that has slipped the reins of the Constitution that gives them its authority, the Constitution that they swear to. Look at the 10th Amendment. Look at the 18th Amendment. You realize that they have absolutely no legitimacy when it comes to the war on drugs. So let's make the federal government legal. Not drugs, but let's make the federal government legal because drugs already are legal under the Constitution. You can handle it at the state level, but if we had any sense, we would understand that it's a medical, it is a psychological, and it is a spiritual issue, and it's not going to be solved by law enforcement. The last 47 years have proven that to us, if anybody's paying any attention. McConnell said it's left consumers with little choice but to buy imported hemp products from foreign-produced hemp. So let's get in on this. As Wyden said, farmers in China and Canada must be laughing all the way at the bank. Yes, they are. They're laughing at how stupid we are here. And so were the people at the UN. Can you believe this? We gave them a list of stuff and said, lock up all of your citizens, create these SWAT teams to come in after people, and they did it. Can you believe that? Because this is how it looks. It also goes after food. Got an article here from Zero Hedge that talk about Joel Salatin. He's a guy who is known, he calls himself a lunatic farmer, and he's talking about the rise of rogue food. As the article on Zero Hedge said, he spent his career advocating for sustainable farming practices, pioneering models that show how food can be grown and raised in ways that are regenerative to our topsoils, that are more humane to livestock, that produce healthier and tastier food and contribute profitably to the local economy. He calls himself a lunatic farmer because so many of the changes that he thinks that our food system needs are either illegal under current law or they are resisted by deep-pocketed corporations who control production and distributing because they control the government. You know, when we have this kind of conversation about what's going on, and we say, well, you know, Google and Facebook can do whatever they want because they're private corporations. Well, who created them? Who was sitting on their board of directors? Who gave them the right to set up these rules? And don't they have to obey their own rules when they create? Oh, of course they don't. Of course they don't. And of course, it's Big Agra that's writing the rules for the rest of us. He said there are anti-competitive restrictions that stifle small sustainable food producers, and it's only getting worse. He said, I'm not optimistic at all about where the government and its bureaucracy is headed. It's getting more and more stifling. The Food Safety Modernization Act that Obama put through, same guy that banned light bulbs. He banned food. He says it's absolutely stifling. It is prejudicial against the size of the farm. It is putting an inordinate price pressure on smaller producers because the amount of paperwork, the amount of licensing, the amount of testing and procedural stuff that is happening on farms, it's through the roof. Let me tell you something. They have driven small individuals out of virtually every area by that same tactic. Paperwork, licensing, testing, procedural. This is what Elizabeth Warren did with her so-called Consumer Financial Protection Board, putting out small banks out of business because they couldn't do all the regulations that are there. My grandfather created a company that I would never be able to create today because of all of these procedures that come to us from the federal government. I couldn't do any kind of manufacturing today. When I wanted to start a business, I had to start a retail business because I couldn't do manufacturing. This is what the federal government has done to us, and that's what they're doing to our food. So on the federal level, he said, I think it's getting worse. Now, I think back to what's happening on the local level, thing that's being pushed back. And he talks about what's going on in Maine. So there was a township, Sedgwick, Maine, in 2015. Sedgwick. He said that township passed a half-page food sovereignty law that said, in our town, if a neighbor wants to do food commerce with another neighbor, it's none of the government's business and no bureaucrat will be involved. So if you want to come to my house, if you want to look around, if you want to smell around, if you want to operate as a voluntary adult, as a consenting adult. Oh, listen to that, a consenting adult. We have to use that terminology that allows every kind of perversion you can imagine. That's okay if it's consenting adults, but we can't have the kind of food we want, even if we are consenting adults, a consenting buyer and seller. He goes, I'm using very strong language here to talk about your freedom of choice. I'm talking about a consenting adult. A consenting adult should be allowed to engage in food commerce without a bureaucrat being involved. And then what happened? He said, well, the state of Maine pushed back. And then we pushed back against the governor. And then he said, all right, we'll let that happen. Then the USDA got involved. Then the federal government got involved. And he said, now that is still being pushed back. And he goes, so this is being watched across the country. But you know what else is being watched? People are watching and recording with their phones when you have SWAT teams attacking farmers and destroying the perfectly good food that they have produced. SWAT teams against farmers because we didn't understand the principles that were violated with the war on drugs. Now we have a war on fresh food brought to us by these big corporations. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
I don't know what's going to happen in the future. I'm saying to you, we have not called for the killing of white people, at least for now. I can't guarantee the future.
Yeah, but I mean, you'd understand somebody watching that, especially as it gets shared on Twitter, they freak out. It sounds like a genocidal call.
Cry babies. crybabies.
I'm not calling for the slaughter of white people, at least for now.
I can't give a guarantee of the future, especially when things are going the way they are.
Subtext.
Especially if things are going the way they are, there will be a revolution in this country, I can tell you now. There will be an unled revolution. An unled revolution is the highest form of anarchy.
All right, you heard Malema, Julius Malema. He is head of a political group there, the EFF. And they're saying that the African National Conference is following their lead. Now, they're calling for the confiscation of land. He's saying, I'm not calling for the murder of white people just yet. Of course, he's danced around on stage saying, kill the boar, shoot him, and so forth. He said, we're going to cut the throat of whiteness. But he said, I'm not calling for it just yet. The guy says, are you talking about not yet? And he goes, not yet. People who say that this is genocide, they're just a bunch of crybabies. So we have joining us right now, Simon Roche. He was once an ANC activist. And now he has seen where these communists are leading. They're in an argument with Malema as to whose idea this was. Who gets credit for the idea of stealing land in South Africa? Simon Roche is now the head of the office of the headquarters of the world's largest non-state civil defense organization, Suidlanders of South Africa. You can find them at suidlanders.org, SUIDLANDERS.org. Also on Twitter at Suidlanders, SUIDLANDERS. Thank you for joining us, Simon.
Thank you very much for having me, Mr. Knight.
A lot has happened in the last 24 hours. We had this tweet from President Trump that has basically had a big impact in your area of the world, hasn't it?
Yeah, very big impact. It spreads through South Africa like wildfire. And it's not the end of things. I must tell you, Mr. Knight, that there are some very, very heavyweight people around the world who have followed this on InfoWars and other channels, and who are picking up on it now, who are coming out to South Africa, who are paying a lot of attention to what's going on. So we are at present in a very, very anxious time. There's a huge threat, but we're getting people really on our side big time now.
That's good. And President Trump is aware of this. He responded as part of his tweet. He put Tucker Carlson and Fox News there. I think he saw a report that Tucker Carlson had done, which is good. It's getting a lot of traction. And President Trump saw this. He said, I have asked Secretary of State Pompeo to closely study the South Africa land and farm seizures and the expropriations and the large-scale killing of farmers. South African government is now seizing land from white farmers. And they have pushed back on this. And they have said, it's actually not very many people at all have been killed. That's not the case, though, is it?
No, it's not the case. According to the figures that were released on approximately the 4th of May, but reported for the first time on Saturday, the 5th of May this year, and by the way, those figures had not been released for the previous 7 years. That tells you something. If the government stubbornly refuses to release the figures pertaining to farm murders, that should say everything. But nevertheless, on Saturday, the 5th of May, the figures were released, and it revealed... There's some gaps in the figures, but it revealed that the minimum possible number of farm murders is at a rate of 169 per 100,000 per year. Now, if you compare that to the European average homicide rate of about 1 per 100,000, or the US homicide rate of 4.88 per 100,000, or indeed of South Africa's nationwide homicide rate of 34 per 100,000, 169 per 100,000. People can say whatever they like. Excuse me for getting hot under the collar, but we didn't present those figures. This is simple arithmetic, and it's beyond dispute.
But it is being disputed by the police there. They're lying about this. They're saying they just released a report back in June that was referred to by the Wall Street Journal, pushing back against President Trump, and they said, well, the number of people killed on farms has declined over the last 20 years. Absolutely amazing. When you talk about the fact that here in the United States, we got a murder rate of slightly over 4, and that includes killing fields that we call Chicago, where you get 60 people or so killed over a weekend. You know, the murder rate is a little over 4, and you're talking about, what was it, 150, you said the murder rate?
The minimum possible rate. There are some gaps in their data. The minimum possible rate is 169 per 100,000, but it may be as high as I demonstrated with simple arithmetic to a team of people that visited us yesterday, 224 per 100,000.
That's amazing. Well, what we're seeing here, and I put this in the context of what people are being taught in universities. I talked to one of our crew here who was just on a missions trip to South Africa, and he was talking about the people that he engaged in universities and how they are talking the same way that we see people talk here in the universities in America. They've been brainwashed with this idea of privilege to the extent that they think that it justifies violence against people, that it justifies theft against people. And so we look at these same issues that are going to be coming to America pretty soon, I think, that are going to be happening, that are happening to you right now, especially when we look at the ANC and the EFF. That's Malema, the guy that we just played the clip of saying, well, I'm not calling for the execution of white people just yet, but that may happen. You stay there. And they say, well, this is genocide. And he goes, hey, a bunch of crybabies about that. Anyway, they're arguing. They're saying, well, we're telling the ANC what to do, Malema says. And the ANC says, no, it was our idea to steal stuff from people. Actually, we had the idea that we would put it in the Constitution. And then that gets to the fundamental idea that we're going to talk about, you know, if you got something in the Constitution or you got something in the government, they're not necessarily, because of democracy, going to recognize human rights of people. We put things in the Constitution to recognize human rights, but even if we take these human rights out of the Constitution, it doesn't take those human rights away from us, does it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, for them, the end justifies the means, and the end is always something politically correct. And the end never diminishes. It's always protracted. You know, they will tell you that the answer to America's problems right now is Roe versus Wade. Then they'll tell you it's to take God out of schools. Then they'll tell you it's not to have a democratic election. In other words, Donald Trump won, but he shouldn't be there, and he didn't get the popular vote, and he played by the rules, and that's not good enough. It never, never, never ends, and you can trace this back to wherever you like, the Federal Reserve, the Immigration Acts of the early 60s in the USA, and to similar things in South Africa. They will always push it a step and a step and a step and a step further until fundamentally they have defeated the core values that have built civilization over, nominally speaking, the past 2,000 years.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I see when I look at the American universities. That's why I focus on what just happened at UNC, which I said is basically a University of North Carolina, not really distinguishable from the ANC. Around the country, and it doesn't matter whether it's a civil war, whether it's Christopher Columbus, or whether it's a president, or whether it's which side they were fighting on the Civil War. They want to tear down the foundations of this country. They want to tear down the culture of this country. They are Marxists. And once they tear down the foundations of our culture and our law, they will tear down the foundations of our farms, of our homes, of our business, and of our lives. We're going to be right back with Simon Roche. Stay with us.
Universal deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Simon Roche. He is in South Africa. He's head of the office, the headquarters of the world's largest non-state civil defense organization, Suidlanders of South Africa, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. It is SUIDLANDERS.org, if you want to get information about that. And we're going to have him tell you what they are doing to defend themselves. Because, folks, if the government comes in and says, we're going to change the Constitution to abrogate fundamental human rights, that is not what we have always had in the West. We have, in the words of the Declaration of Independence, established governments to protect the human rights that are given to us by God. And we see this kind of discussion when we talk about the deplatforming of InfoWars by Google and by Facebook and others. We hear from the people who have always hated corporations, the left. They hate corporations. They hate private property. But now they say, oh, corporations have private rights and they can censor if they want to. No, it's a human right to have free speech. And I'm not going to turn that over to a corporation or a government. Of course, these corporations make the rules, but then they violate the rules. They have double standards. I don't want double standards. I want something like what is outlined in the First Amendment. But if the government were to go in tomorrow and to say we're going to abrogate the First Amendment or the Second Amendment, that wouldn't take away our human rights. If the government in South Africa comes in and says, oh, we're going to do this legally. We're going to change the Constitution, and then we'll confiscate property from white farmers. Why? Because they're white. that doesn't make it legitimate. As I said when I was covering the Bundy standoff, I said, these guys are going to get the cows, they're going to get their property, or we're going to become the property. If you don't have property rights, folks, you are the property. You are the slave if you don't have property rights. If you don't have the right to self-defense, if you don't have a right to free speech, you are a slave when you give up your liberties. And they can't take it away with a piece of paper, legitimately. And I want to talk to Simon about what they're doing to stand up to this, because it may come down to force. Hope it doesn't come down to that. But there's something that came up when I was reading this article, excellent article from New American, Simon, and they talked about the history of South Africa. And I was absolutely amazed that 100 years ago, there were only 6 million people in South Africa. And now the population is over 50 million, but the white population has only increased by 3 million. So 100 years ago, the entire population was 6 million. The number of white South Africans has increased by 3 million. But then the rest of the people are immigrants who've come in from neighboring, black immigrants who've come in from neighboring countries in the last 100 years. I was not aware of that. And I don't think most Americans are. I think that really is a very interesting point that's not being put out here, because the narrative is we can take this property from them because they took it from us. And that's not really the case, is it?
No, it's not really the case. And this is one of the reasons why we would say that what is befalling us now is going to befall the USA and Europe before too long, because yes, the progression of events is identical. It comes down to a sort of a globalist agenda. In simple terms, the black population of South Africa has grown enormously. Yes, to some extent by immigration from outside neighboring countries. It was very popular during apartheid for countries, for blacks in liberated African countries to come and seek work and a better lifestyle in South Africa. But above and beyond that, there has been a massive increase in the black South African indigenous population over the past 100 years, clearly down to surplus money, better nutrition, employment, clean running water, electricity, and good health services that were provided by the racist apartheid government to black people. In fact, to this day, the largest hospital in the world is in the township of Soweto, the Chris Hani Baragwanath Hospital, and it's surrounded by many other hospitals. So the point is that this tiny black population has exploded something phenomenally, and they're now saying we don't have land. And people like Saitlanders would say, well, hang on a second. It is true that 100 years ago, you had the minority of the land. Nobody's saying that there was an equal distribution. But at the time that you had that land, it was hectares and hectares and hectares. In other words, tens of acres per person. This is mathematics. Whether it's convenient mathematics or inconvenient mathematics changes nothing. To this day, The tribal trust of the AmaZulu people, the Zulu people in the province of KwaZulu-Natal on the east coast of South Africa, occupies 32% of the land of that province and always has done so. It is it's a fiction, it's a fallacy, it's a lie, it's an absolute fairy tale to say that black people only have 10% of the land and they were overcrowded from the beginning and it's so sad and it's too bad. The facts are that a small black population was given relatively large tracts of land, as much as 32% in some areas.
Yeah, that's interesting. When they talk about the fact that you took the land from them, that the Zulus have had, as you point out, the same amount of land that they have today, they've always had. But it has been this massive population increase over the last century. It's been nearly 50 million. It's 52 million today. It was 6 million a century ago. And only 3 million of that increase has come from white Afrikaners. The rest of it has been birth rate and immigration. We're seeing the same thing happening, as you pointed out, in Europe. Massive waves of immigration coming in there. Same thing happening in America as we see the Hispanic population. They're saying we have a right to all of the American Southwest. They call it ASLAN. They say we're going to make America Mexico again and so forth. So we know where this is going to happen. The same type of thing is going to happen. The only way that you're going to have a peaceful and prosperous future is if you support the idea of private property, which means a willing buyer and a willing seller. That's the only way that you can proceed forward, because the only alternative to that is violence, civil war, and confiscation, which is what the communists want.
Well, this gives the lie again. Thank you for bringing this up. The one point that I wanted to make a minute ago is that you guys are willing to talk about this in these terms. Our own media is not willing to do so. So we have to believe that there's an agenda. They're overlooking basic, simple facts, real, actual facts. And there's the fact that they're not willing to talk about it, as they're not willing to talk about truths like, for example, Charlottesville, to which I was a witness last year. It means that there's a similar theme, a similar puppet master in both of our societies. You speak about the willing buyer, willing seller. 4,323 farms that were given over to the government on the willing seller, willing buyer basis by white farmers in South Africa have never been given to the black people for whom they were intended. 4,323 farms. So we've got another Zimbabwe story where the government says we're taking the land for the good of the people. It's what's fair and right and just, except that we're keeping 2/3 for ourselves.
I can't believe that, Simon. You're telling me that socialists who go out and expropriate property, as they did in Venezuela and all these other communist countries, that they would keep it for themselves? I mean, these people are kleptocrats. They're not even socialists. They're just thieves out there. They will use any kind of a veneer, whether it is, you know, from each according to his ability to each according to his need, or whether it's black against white. They will use any kind of lie to get what they want, which is money and power, and they will keep that money and power. That's what Hugo Chavez and the rest of them have always done.
Yeah, something like 1/3 of the Zimbabwean population, it's estimated to be between 3 million and 5 million people, live in South Africa. That's how wonderful their land expropriation process was. And it's very well known that the majority of that land, or the prime pieces of the land, landed up in the hands of the Zimbabwean government. And it will be the same in the USA. You're on an almost identical trajectory. The point will come where your ostensibly benevolent, altruistic presidents, let's say Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, God forbid that she should be a president, but they'll be telling you that they're doing it for the good of the people while lining their pockets more than anybody else ever did.
That's right. And we can already see Sweden, one of the places where everybody was, yes, let's do that. We have an obligation to bring everybody in. They're burning the country down. People there are waking up. Are we going to wake up here before it's too late? Will it be too late for South Africa? Stay with us. We've got one more segment with Simon Roche, and I want to ask him what they are doing to defend themselves. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. I'm the lunatic you're looking for here. We'll see. We're talking to Simon Roche out of South Africa. We're going to talk to him about what they're doing to defend themselves. Because you know what? I'm not going to be shamed by the social justice warriors to defend these people when you've got Marxists and racists saying we're going to steal their land, and if they resist, we're going to kill them in an act of genocide. And brag about that. We're going to cut the throat of whiteness. I see this is happening in the United States. I understand where this is going. And I understand the globalist agenda. And I understand the attempt to silence us. And anybody who wants to talk about this by using CNN or Google, or they're not going to silence us. And they're not going to shame us into allowing this to happen. Because first they're going to come for the South Africans. Then they're going to come for you. They're going to come for the Italians. They're going to come for the Swedes. They're going to come for the Hungarians. They're going to come for the French and the Germans. Every last one of us. This is a globalist agenda. And they want to overthrow every one of these countries because they don't want to have anybody who can resist their power. They want to level everything so they can be the last man standing. That is the tactic that they use, country by country, and that is the globalist tactic that they're using. So I want to go back to Simon Roche. Simon, tell us what you're doing. I've got this bio here from you saying that in March of this year, you guys opened a campaign to raise funds to get vital necessities for civilians, things like diesel fuel. You said this, some of this stuff was promised to you 6 or 7 times by senior ANC government leaders. What's going on there in terms of supplies, and how are you defending yourself, and how can people help?
Yes. Well, we're a civil defense organization constituted under the specific provisions of international law, particularly Protocols 1 and 2, additional to the Geneva Conventions. And I emphasize the phrase specific provisions. We are people, an identifiable ethnic group as per the law, who are planning to defend ourselves in the event of nationwide anarchy. We're taxpayers, we're family people, we're not instigating an insurrection or a sedition of the state and the society. In fact, it's a well-known fact that our core membership, Saeklander's core membership, is acknowledged to be the single greatest tax contributor in South African society. Now, when you factor that only 3.1 million people in South Africa pay income tax and there are 16.3 million people on social grants, our people, God-fearing, decent, respectable, law-abiding people, are keeping this country afloat. End of story. There's no dispute. So we're not here to cause trouble, but we are here to protect ourselves in the event of a crisis. Our plan is to get people out of cities, our people, out of cities and into remote areas where it is demographically favorable. In other words, where there are not teeming millions of people who are hungry and angry in a time of crisis. I think I mentioned to you previously, Mr. Knight, that on about the 3rd of November last year, our Minister of Defense said that if white people stand together once again in a peaceful protest, as they did on Monday, the 31st of October, a completely peaceful protest, nothing burned down, which is unusual for South Africa, they would bring a genocide upon themselves. So we have the EFF threatening a genocide. We have the Minister of Defense threatening a genocide. We are really genuinely embattled. So in March of this year, we opened a campaign with Freestarter in the USA, a crowdfunding platform closely associated with the conservative portion of the USA, associated with the Trump organization and entity. And they have been raising funds for us to purchase dieseline and medicine and other vital necessities for civilians in the event of a crisis. We will come together in a particular part of South Africa, which is more or less secret, and which is very much along the lines of Nicholas Nassim Taleb's anti-fragility. It's not a specific place, it's not a specific time, but it is a specific idea. By gathering a critical mass of people together, we will be able to ensure that we are not picked off one by one in the event of the crisis, which our government is promising and which seems to be at our doorstep now. Even liberal organizations, to our astonishment, have in the past few days been talking about a civil war. So it's no longer just the
conservatives. Yeah, well, we heard that
saying,
with the clip from Malema. We heard that from the clip from Malema where he says, well, I'm not calling for the slaughter of white people yet. And the guys go, wait, do you realize how that's going to sound? It's going to sound like genocide. And it's like, yeah, well, you know, things like that happen. Oh, it'll be an unled revolution. That's the only thing that he did to pull back. He said, well, I'm not going to lead it. Other people will do it, but it's going to come and we're going to have anarchy. They're saying there's going to be anarchy. And he's saying it's going to be other people. He's going to be leading, but he's saying, oh, make me the leader. Give me all the property that you confiscate from these people and everything will be just fine. Right. But it's not going to be.
Yeah, it's not going to be like that. It is never like that. Julius Malema has been stoking the fires of discontent amongst the helpless and hopeless black African population of South Africa. Those people who are poorly educated, have very few prospects and can't see any hope ahead of them and can't do anything about it. Hopeless and helpless. He has been stoking the fires of discontent in such a way that we sense that now the dam wall is about to break. And it's a metaphor that is being used over and over and over again. It is as if there is a crack in the dam wall. And when it does give way, it will give way all at once. You know, it's not going to be a timid little leak that leaks over days and weeks and months and years. It's going to happen all at once. And he can take full responsibility for it. But he has been aided and abetted by our president, Cyril Ramaphosa, who has lied through his teeth about things like the original sin of South Africa being when the whites stole all the land, when it's a matter of recorded fact that there were no Bantu black people west of the Great Fish River when the whites and the blacks first met in 1777, meaning that at least 40% of the land was never stolen. And I've just recently come from a farm near the town of Tarkastad or the town of Queenstown in the Eastern Cape, where the farmers showed me their family graves going back to 1789. Now, how is it possible that that land could have been? I mean, it's preposterous. It's absurd.
Oh, yeah. But it doesn't matter because they can erase history. And that's what we're seeing happening here. Just as I talked about UNC, they're tearing, as they're shouting Tar Heel, and they're tearing down the Civil War statue of the guy who represents what a Tar Heel is. They have removed all connection to history and to reality with these kids, and all they do is feed them this Marxist narrative of white skin privilege because they realize that here in America they weren't going to make it into an economic class warfare, which is what the Marxists in Europe were able to do. They said, no, we're going to have to do a race war. And that's why this pattern that is happening in South Africa is so important for Americans to understand as well. Now, if they want to stand with you again, that is Free Starter. That is Starter is spelled S-T-A-R-T-R, no E. It's not E-R, but S-T-A-R-T-R, correct? And can they find that information they go to your website?
Yeah, and they can find a PayPal link on our website. Everything is easy to find. You've already given the website, satelanders.org. Everything is to be found there. It's very easy, very convenient, and people can make a donation. The money will be used well, particularly for vital necessities for civilians. Our first goal is not to fight. Our first goal is to protect our mothers, sisters, and daughters. That's who we are. That is our fundamental nature. But if push comes to shove, make no mistake, under international law, we will create a defensible perimeter in the space that we occupy to save our children from the horrors that are being promised to us.
Absolutely. Well, I hope that doesn't come to that. But the rhetoric is being stepped up. Hopefully, President Trump can talk some sense to these people, maybe even some of the bankers, you know, because the bankers are talking about this is going to be economic collapse if this were to happen. They've already seen it happen in Zimbabwe. This is not a theory. They've already seen this happen. What happens after they just come in and confiscate the land? As you pointed out, you have massive numbers of refugees from Zimbabwe that have flooded into South Africa because of what was done to that country under the same policies that are now being pushed there. So, Simon, we hope that's not going to happen, but keep in touch with us. You're welcome to come back at any time to talk to us and to explain what's going on there. Good luck to you. And again, that website is suidlanders.org. That is SUIDLANDERS.org. Thank you very much, Simon. Before we
Thank
go to
you
break,
very
I
much,
just want to
Mr. Knight, and God bless you for what you've done for us.
Well, God bless you. We hope that God protects you as we move forward in the future. It's a very, very dangerous thing. And folks, this is the kind of globalist agenda that is being pushed to tear down every country of Western civilization. You need to understand that. This is not a unique situation. This is a pattern that is being done everywhere. Now, we've got just about 30 seconds left here, and I want to tell you a little bit about the products that keep us independent as we're under attack from Google and others. We've got a couple of new products, Ultimate Bone Broth, 50% off. Also a new product, Ultimate Female Force, also 50% off. You can find those at InfoWarsStore.com. And one special that is exclusive to our audience. That is the Wake Up America Patriot Blend Coffee, 20% off with the code REALNEWS. That's 20% off of both the original and immune support of Wake Up America Patriot Blend Coffee with the code REALNEWS. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas. It's The Real News with your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. Joseph Fair is going to be joining us in the next hour with WND. He's going to be talking about the censorship that is coming towards all alternative media. And we say alternative media in the sense that we are not the big establishment like CNN, ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, these people who are tied to the military-industrial complex, to the surveillance state. So he's going to talk to us about what is ahead. And there's an interesting series of articles I wanted to talk to Joseph Fair about, talking about life after Google. This is by a new book by George Gilder, and they're running a series of articles, interviews that they've had with him. And I'm looking very forward to life after Google. As a matter of fact, I'm already experiencing life after Google because they purged me. So, I'm living in that world right now. And believe me, there is a future without Google. There's not much of a future with it. As a matter of fact, when you look at the types of things, I'm going to be talking in a couple of weeks at a conference that's being put together by Steve Quayle, the Gen 6 conference. And by the way, you can still get streaming tickets to that with the code ALEX, A-L-E-X. You can save 10% off the streaming code. But when I look at the future is going to be one of post-humanism, or it's going to be one of post-globalism. We are going to either kill this idea of globalism, or globalism is going to kill the human race and put us in a post-humanist future. So as we look at this, there's an article from Activist Post talking about a corporation that you may not have heard of. I'd never heard of this corporation before, but it's a corporation that is building a spy grid in China. And I'm not talking about Google, the gulag. Yes, we have documented many times how Google is doing that and working with China to do that. But this is another company. And they are creating driver's licenses in the United States. 42 states are using this company to make state-issued driver's licenses. And they've now got a new product, a digital mobile license, that you don't have to carry this physical card. You know, you can go, not cashless, but you can go plastic cardless. You can just put it on your smartphone. And then you can get pinged by the police everywhere you go. By putting it on your smartphone. But it's far more sinister than that. This company is called Idemia. It almost sounds like a disease involving your identity, doesn't it? It really is a disease involving your identity. They've also called themselves formerly Morpho. Now, that kind of sounds like some kind of a satanic comic book villain, Morpho. But when you look at what they're doing, and they're operating in 70 countries here in the United States, their clients include the Department of Defense, Homeland Security, the FBI, and others. When you look at what they're doing abroad in China and in India, they really are like comic book villains. They brag about the fact that they are collecting and building and managing databases of entire populations for governments. This is from their company website. We build, manage, and databases of entire populations for governments, law enforcement agencies, and other government bodies around the world, whether for national ID, health cards, bank cards, or even driver's license programs. And in India, what this looks like is a program called Aadhaar. They're counting everybody that lives in India, and they're assigning each person a unique identification number. Mark of the beast. Several court cases have gone to India's Supreme Court on grounds of privacy violations from this program that is being administered by Idemia. One of the court filings, they said, details arise of China's social credit system. They said, we don't want to have happen in India what happened in China. As we've said all along, China is the beta test site for the New World Order's global program of surveillance and control. They said the Chinese government initially permitted corporations to aggregate personal data of their customers. And to allow these corporations to build algorithms, you know, kind of like Facebook is doing with their trustworthiness. Are you trusty? Are you truthy? Is Facebook and Google trusty and truthy? Stay with us. I've got some more details about this program you will not believe. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. As I was saying at the top of the hour, it's not just Google that's being used by governments to create a panopticon surveillance state for control. There's also a company called Idemia, formerly known as Morpho, a billion-dollar multinational corporation. They brag about the fact they've been building and managing databases for quite some time of entire populations to be used by government and law enforcement agencies and other government bodies around the world and so forth. Talking about national ID and driver's license programs, like I said, they're involved in issuing driver's licenses in 42 states. You know, one of the first and earliest videos I saw of Alex Jones was when he went into the Texas driver's license department when they started mandating that we had to get fingerprints to get a driver's license here in Texas. And not only reporting about it, but protesting it. And this is where we wind up in a situation like this. And of course, these people work hand in glove with the Chinese and Indian governments. They're working here with Homeland Security. They're working with the FBI. They're working with the other agency that they have here, Department of Defense, of course, to establish this biometric control system. And in India, they've assigned a unique number to everybody. They are very concerned about this because the people in India have said, wait, this is going down the same road that we've seen already happen in China. Bingo! China is the beta test site for all this. This is where they're rolling out all the stuff. The corporations wanted to go to China. They had a free hand. They had a slave population. Not only slave labor, but people who weren't going to stand up or have the ability to stand up to an authoritarian government. They could do whatever they wanted to those people. And they are using them like lab rats. And the big multinational corporations and the globalists are shameful partners in all of this, especially the companies like Google and Apple, who are so compliant in all this. They say the Chinese government initially permitted corporations to aggregate personal data of their customers and build algorithms. This is coming from a court filing in India where the people are saying, we don't want to have this happen to us in India. He said, look what happened in China. They let the corporations build this database. And then they used that to rate their customers. And then after the corporations in China created their trustworthiness, as we just saw the last couple of days that came out about Facebook, and we said, yeah, where's it all going? First it came, first they did it with the corporations, with Facebook and so forth. So then these applications began to get integrated, and the large technology companies in China began to dominate every aspect of citizens' lives. Oh, yeah, of course, right? Silicon Valley should rule us, right? That's what the Democrats say. They love the big corporations, don't they? All the big corporations have to do is come out and say, we love abortion and we love gay marriage. And then the left says, oh, that's good. They're good big corporations. So we want them to dictate to us and let them make the rules that they don't have to follow. And they can take anybody down at any time. Now, coming up in the next segment, we're going to be talking to Joseph Fair. They've got a series of interviews. Today, they published segment number 2 out of 3 interviews that they had with George Gilder. He's a futurist who's been around for a long time, had a very significant book back at the time of Reagan. And I want to talk to him about Life After Google. That's a new book that George Gilder has. So we're going to talk to Joseph Fair about what's being done to WND, as well as what the future may look like without Google, because we're going to create a future without Google, or there will be no future for us, quite frankly, because this is what these people do. After they let the corporations in China establish this system and start rating everybody, everybody got used to it, everybody accepted it, then the government folded it into their social credit rating system that people started to discover back in April of this year. It didn't take very long to go from April until August till we discovered, oh, by the way, it's being done now by Facebook. They won't tell you what your rating score is, or how you get a bad rating or a good rating, but we can kind of guess from their political leanings and from their political protectors and mentors and patrons in Congress. And so they said, again, from this court filing in India where they're worried about this, they said, once the system had taken control of the entire country, the State Council of the Central Government in China released an outline of the social credit system, which specifies that such social credit rating systems would be integrated into their government by 2020. And of course, they are already punishing people by not allowing them to travel or to have educational benefits or to have certain jobs. If they don't like what you have to say, if you're critical of the government, they just cut you off. That is what's coming here to America. So we're talking to Joseph Farah in the next segment about what is happening here in America. I want to switch to Venezuela, because as reported a couple of days ago, they had a solution for their rampant socialism. Again, socialism is a Ponzi scheme. As Margaret Thatcher put it, you eventually run out of other people's money. That's the problem with socialism. Well, that's the definition of a Ponzi scheme. You eventually run out of other people's money. And of course, the crown jewel of socialism has always been Social Security. It was a lie from the beginning. They picked the age of 65 in Germany where they first did it. Bismarck picked that because that was the life expectancy of people. He didn't expect anybody or very many people, to get that payment. Oh, we'll put you in retirement when you're 65. They'll be dead. So that's why they keep raising the retirement age. And of course, Social Security is a Ponzi scheme. And it is running out of other people's money because of the demographic inversion that is happening here. But anyway, so in Venezuela, this Ponzi scheme of socialism is running out, and they've got hyperinflation there. So they decided that they would solve it by lopping off 5 zeros from their currency and adding a bunch of zeros to the minimum wage. So they raise the minimum wage by a factor of 60, and they lopped 5 zeros off of their currency. And they call their currency the Bolivar. And folks, this is pure Bolivar. It's pure BS, pure Bolivar. But by the way, this looks, as I pointed out the other day, looks exactly like what we see the Democrats and even establishment Republicans pushing. That is a policy of inflation. They don't want this much inflation. But, you know, just inflate away the debt and the problems, you know, just add more zeros to the currency. Everything will be fine. We won't have to pay back all that money with that same currency. And also the Democrat policy of let's make everybody rich by raising the minimum wage. So just add zeros to your paycheck and take them away from the currency. It's all solved. Well, actually, it didn't work. One day after, they have chaos. Who'd have thought? You didn't see this coming? Seriously? And then here's an example they have from the Zero Hedge story. Enrique Rosales, and this guy is a 29-year-old waiter. He's talking to the Wall Street Journal. He goes to an ATM the day after they fixed everything by taking 5 zeros off of the currency. He goes to an ATM to get out the new currency, and he found out that the maximum that it would disperse was 10 sovereign bolivars a day, the equivalent of 15 cents. U.S. 15 cents a day out of the ATM. But it doesn't matter because there's nothing in the store shelves that he can buy anyway. It's a completely broken economy. He says he hasn't seen cash in 5 months. He hasn't been able to pay for bus fare. He walks several miles a day from his hilltop slum to the seafood eatery where he works. I'm surprised that they have customers or food there. And he says, I'm realizing that the government has no plan. Well, this guy learns pretty quickly, doesn't he? He's yeah, meet the new Bolivar, same as the old Bolivar. Don't get fooled again. And they keep feeding us the same Bolivar everywhere we go. It's kind of interesting to see that George Soros and groups associated with him, especially the Young Turds, were instrumental in helping our new poster child for socialism here in the United States. There you go. You see the pictures there of how many the stacks of cash required to buy certain things, like a toilet paper, for example, or a piece of meat. As a matter of fact, there's a lot more paper there than there is in a roll of toilet paper. And if it wasn't, if it was cleaner, you'd be, there you are right there. If it was, there's a lot more paper to buy the toilet paper than there is in the roll of toilet paper. If it was only cleaner, you could use that instead, but that cash looks like it's been handled quite a bit. I don't think anybody would want to use that for anything. And, of course, it is pretty much worthless. We're going to be right back. Stay with us. We're going to be talking to Joseph Farah about the censorship that is being imposed on us by the world's largest corporations, the largest corporations we've ever known. But that's fine, say the liberals, who have always hated corporations. They're good with that. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and joining us now is Joseph Farah, founder, editor, and CEO of WND. And of course, WND.com is also under attack. And as Benjamin Franklin pointed out, we are going to hang together, or we are going to hang separately. It's not just InfoWars. It's WND, it's Breitbart, it's Prager, you name it. Gateway Pundit, everybody is going to be taken down by these people for political reasons, to try to hack the election. That's what they said. Happened that they're saying, well, we say hack the election, but we're not saying that anybody got any voting machines and changed any votes. It was just that somebody told the truth about Hillary Clinton, and that hacked the election. Well, they don't want the truth told about their agenda. They don't want the truth told about their politicians. They want their reliable mockingbird press to have the only voice in the room. And so what they have done to InfoWars is very bold and brash and out front, but they have done the same types of things to other institutions in a very subtle way. And Joseph Fair has talked about what they've done at WND, but I also wanted to talk to him about a series of interviews. Interview series number two came out today. It's a three-part interview that they did with George Gilder about a book that he's just come out with, Life After Google. And I am looking so forward to Life After Google because it has already begun for me. I have been purged by them, and I am obviously on their list, as is Alex Jones. We saw they took down H3H3 as they were even mentioning his name. They had a bot that censored them and took them down a live broadcast. They took me down without explanation or without warning because, you know, if they make the rules, they don't have to follow the rules. We see this with Hillary Clinton and the Democrats in Washington. Same thing is true of our governing corporations and this fascist state where the big corporations merge with big government. So they don't have to explain the rules. They don't have to follow the rules. And I've gotten no explanation from them. I never had any warning. So I've been taken down as I set up a new channel and just put up two videos. It was supposed to be a three strikes and you're out. How did that happen if you've only got two videos? I put up a new channel. And they took me down within 16 hours. So I guess I am living life after Google, Joseph. And we're all going to be going there pretty soon if George Gilder is right. And I hope he is. He's pointed out some fundamental flaws in their business model. But tell us a little bit about what's going on with WND.
Well, first of all, let me just say, David, thanks for having me. And also, thanks for mentioning Gilder's book, because I've been reading it. It's dense. It's Life After Google. You know, George Gilder's a brilliant guy, and he speaks, you know, at a level that some of us, you know, we have to read it two or three times before we really understand what he's saying.
It's like a math textbook or something, right?
Yeah, and I would recommend it to every one of your viewers, because it's a fabulous effort. It gives us hope too, because yeah. I think he's right. I think that Google has been the architect of its own demise, because it's going against, you know, pardon me, but this is what Gilder says, and I think he's right. They're really at war with God, ultimately. It's not just, you know, the United States of America, the Constitution, the First Amendment, those kinds of things, but they have actually kind of, the way I look at it, and I've written this, that, you know, in essence, what Google is doing is reestablishing the Tower of Babel.
Yeah.
You know, I thought about that early on, but it's so true now, because they want one speech code for all of us. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's the one, maybe the distinction from the Tower of Babel. I'm not sure there's any, you know, God didn't want us speaking the same language for a reason. And ultimately what they're doing is a little bit different, because they want to make the rules of engagement when it comes to speech and freedom of the press. They want to be the ones that define what's hate speech and what's not. And that's ultimately the battle that we're involved in. And you're absolutely right with regard to, you know, the way these social media, this cartel, I call it the speech code cartel. We're talking about Google and YouTube and Facebook and Twitter and Apple and Amazon. A lot of people forget Amazon in the
picture. Oh, yeah.
They're involved with this too. But, you know, the way they came after Alex was so overt. You know, they took a sledgehammer approach to Alex Jones. And you know, we thank you, by the way, for taking that blow, because it exposed what the agenda is. With us, it's a different thing. They've been strangling us slowly. Over time, over years, over more than a decade.
And here's the key thing is that, you know, they have been quietly and subversively doing this to institutions. And people come out and say, yeah, look at our metrics. Look at how they've throttled our stuff. And we showed the same thing with our site as well, was happening to us. But that's hard to get across to people. But when you see these big corporations come together and within a space of 12 hours, deplatform everything that you've done over years, destroying 6 years of my work on Google that was posted up there, banning me from setting up another channel that I tried to do a couple of days later, didn't have anything to do, especially with InfoWars or anything, just taking me down after I put up two videos in just a couple of hours. So that's the thing that's going to wake people up, as you're talking about this hate speech. They don't even define what it is. So hate speech is speech that they hate. And that's the only definition you can find.
I'm not interested in defining what people can say and what they can't say.
Exactly.
That's not where we're coming from. This is where the left is coming from. And by the way, make no mistake about it. When you're talking about this speech code cartel, this digital cartel in the Silicon Valley, that's what they've exposed themselves. That's what they want. They want to decide, you know, what kind of books you can publish, if you can sell them at Amazon. We've got members of Congress at this point appealing to Jeff Bezos to not allow any book for sale on Amazon that isn't approved by the Southern Poverty Leadership Council. I mean, this is insanity.
Well, you had an article at WND talking about how they're essentially going to do that with the Bible or with any kind of Christian textbook that says we want to help people. If you want to change your sexual orientation, we'll help you do that. Oh, that's can't do that if you want to change it from homosexual to heterosexual. Can't do that. We'll help you to go the other way or do anything else. But you can't go from homosexual to heterosexual. We'll call that hate speech and we'll ban that, which, as Huckabee pointed out, and you quoted him in your article, that's going to lead to the banning of Bibles by logical extension.
Exactly. And California's there legislatively. They're ready to do it. And, you know, there's this old saying, where California goes, the nation goes. Let's hope that's not true. But look, you know, they've done us a favor in a way, because they've exposed themselves so frequently with so many different, you know, you talked about Prager and Alex Jones and Breitbart and WND. You know, what we've got to do is recognize this is not about, and by the way, who was the congressman who said, you know, it's not enough to ban one website, meaning Alex Jones, right?
Yeah,
it's out of Connecticut. Yeah. Stop with Alex Jones. Come on. Mm-hmm. And again, I think it's very important for people to recognize that this is not a new thing that has just happened. The reason it's coming to light now is because you and WND and Breitbart and other independent news sites are talking about it, exposing it. And that's critical. We need your, you know, support This is not.
We're going to have to hang together, like I said, or we're going to hang separately. And that means that it's not just going to be WND and InfoWars hanging together. That means that the audiences are going to have to hang together with us as well. It's one of the reasons why last couple of days I've highlighted other alternative platforms like BitChute and Minds.com, where people can see and share information. We'll be right back with Joseph Farah, WND.com.
Not sorry when snowflakes can't handle the truth. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Joseph Farah, founder, editor, CEO of WND. And you can find it at WND.com. And on their site, they have a series of articles. Number two came out today, a series of three articles, interviews with George Gilder. George Gilder is a real visionary. As I point out in the article yesterday, part one, he had a book in 1994 called Life After Television. He's kind of hearkening back to that now with a new book called Life After Google. But he wrote that book in 1994. 13 years later, Steve Jobs, something of a visionary himself, wouldn't you say? Steve Jobs, who made Apple what it was. Of course, they're just kind of coasting on what Steve Jobs did at the current time. But Steve Jobs, 13 years later, talked about what a visionary he was. And he's got some things to say about Google that I think are very interesting. But I want to read a quote and get a comment from Joseph Farah, because, Joseph, you talked about in the last segment, you were talking about the fact that this really has kind of a spiritual background to it. And in this article, you say Gilder is saying they talk about what they want to do in prophetic and even religious terms. When you look at the founders of Google, it says their ultimate objective is to create a new system of the world, quote unquote. That's the way they refer to it. Where all the data is compiled into a single place to be analyzed by increasingly sophisticated algorithms that transcend the human mind's capability. And when I look at this, and I look at the fact that they have bought up all the promising robotics and AI technology. They brought in Ray Kurzweil, big proponent of the singularity and transhumanism. As I've said before, the future is either going to be one that is post-globalism. We're going to get rid of this whole globalism idea that is being forced down our throats. Or they're going to issue in their future of transhumanism, where we get rid of the humans, or we transform the humans into something that is completely different.
That's right. You know, he talks about their faith in artificial intelligence and what it's going to do and how it's going to transform society. You know, think about this. I've been hearing about this for so long. You know, this has been 20 years. I know people who believe that it's going to fundamentally transform our society. And I would say, you know, with all the breakthroughs we've seen in artificial intelligence, just ask yourself, would you rather be on a phone line talking to customer service to get your, you know, something straight with your TV or your phone system or what have you? Would you rather be on with one of those robots? Or would you rather say, agent, please, and get a human being to help you? You know, I don't believe that this, listen, ever since I was a kid, they've been talking about automation, you know, eliminating millions and millions of jobs and so forth. You know, I'll believe that when I see it. And Gilder really explodes that whole notion that artificial intelligence is going to be superior to anything God devised in the human mind. And he shoots holes in that so thoroughly, it's amazing.
But if you go back and you look at what they're saying, the thing that is core with the transhumanists is the same stuff that you see in Genesis 1. You will become like God, and you will live forever. I mean, this has been the fundamental desire of these people, and it is what motivates them. And the dangerous thing about this, Joseph, is I don't think they're going to transfer their essence. They don't even know what the soul is. They don't even know what they are. And they're not going to, you know, at the very best, they could make a copy of themselves somewhere else. I pointed that out when I talked to Zoltan Isvan, who was head of the Transhumanist Party when it came here. But they're not going to be successful in that. Nevertheless, that is their motivation. And they have a lot of powerful technological tools. We've seen technology used as a tool by humans. These people have the capability to use this technology against humans. And that is what is really frightening, because they are embedded in this military-industrial complex, and they can do some very, very dangerous and sinister things. Or they can just have, you know, they can do evil things, or can just get out of hand. You know, right. And genetics or whatever can get out of hand.
You know, fundamentally, they believe in programming, and they like artificial intelligence because they think they can program it to do what they want to do. And they're pretty good at that. But what they're really trying to do is to program us. OK, that's what it's all about. Another thing that Gilder makes a great point on in his book, Life After Google, is this notion that you can do what Google is doing and everything is for free. And, you know, that was real attractive, I think, at the beginning of Google. But now we are starting to understand how they do that. It's because they want to know everything about us. And that is not free. We're giving away our privacy. We're giving away our freedom when we cooperate with Google and believe that everything can be free. By the way, this is having an impact on our political culture as well, because the millennial generation has largely, I think, bought into this notion that everything can be free. And I believe in the coming elections, particularly in the next presidential election, we're going to see the Democratic Party candidate, whoever it might be. I have some ideas about who it might be, with an agenda that is so radical and emulates this notion of everything being free, not just healthcare, not just, you know, everything will be government subsidized. It will be handed to you on a silver platter. You know,
because they have been brought up that way. The millennials who are embracing socialism have been brought up, oh, look, everything is free. And we've been saying to people for a long time, look, if it's free, you are the product. You better understand that's the case. And in this article that you got, the second one today, we're talking about why Google's free stuff isn't free. One of the things that Gilder points out is that, you know, they said, well, we don't really have to have any security here because who wants to steal free stuff? And he said, but we understand there's a value to privacy. There's a value to security. There's a value to liberty. You know, if they give you free stuff, you don't have freedom. And that's really the background of this. But I think that's one of the key things that Gilder looks at, says this is going to help to take them down, because security and privacy are valuable commodities that people are going to look for and that are going to be away from Google.
Precisely. You know, we can't really blame the millennial generation entirely. This is how they have been programmed. They've been programmed this way in the educational system and academia and so forth. And at the same time, this is the generation, I think Gilder makes this point, but others have made it as well, that this generation, this millennial generation, is probably going to be the first one that is worse off financially than its not just financially, but financially especially, worse off than previous generations. You know, we've had this continuum in American history of, you know, each generation has a better life. And this one has been strangled at birth with huge debt and so forth. And now they're, you know, you almost can't blame them for looking for an easy, cheap way out, turning to government to get your college loans forgiven and so forth and so on. That is how I think the political culture in the next couple of years is going to be transformed. Whoever gets that millennial generation, which is now the biggest, bigger than the baby boomers, voting for them. And we saw, you know, how much appeal Bernie Sanders had in the 2016 election. This is really an important thing to keep an eye on.
Well, that's why I look at this and I say what they're trying to do is they're trying to manipulate this election by making sure that they control sources of information. They want to make sure that people can't find us, can't see us, can't find you when they're looking on Google, can't share your articles. I say you control what people see, what they hear, and what they're allowed to share, then you're going to be able to control the election. And that's why some people have said, hey, we need to complain to the FEC about this. It's not only just a kind of a trust situation involved here where you got corporations colluding to exclude other people that are in competition with them, but it's also something that affects our elections directly. If they can control the information and control the narrative, they can, with Google, they can tell whether the stories and that they're putting out there are having an effect. They can get that feedback loop there.
David, it is no coincidence that this war on independent media, on independent thought, on the internet, started after the 2016 election. They weren't let that happen again. And now we have the memoranda to prove it.
You put that out there. Drudge got that. Yeah, got that memo saying, this is what we got to do. We got to take over social media. We got shellacked. They can't let that happen. They will do anything to keep that from happening. Thank you for joining us. Joseph Farah, WND.com. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We have one more segment. I don't want to get into the impeachment buzz that is going through mainstream media and CNN and how this has blown up on them. It's kind of interesting to see what has happened to this. But before we do, real quickly, I want to tell you how you can hang with us. As I was saying to Joseph Farah, WND, we're going to hang together or hang separately. And that doesn't just mean the different news organizations out there talking about this fascist censorship. This is the merger of the world's biggest corporations with the world's biggest government to shut down free speech and what you're allowed to see, what you're allowed to hear, what you're allowed to share. And we can hang together and we can complain about this, but we're going to have you hang with us or we will all hang separately. And the way that you can hang with us and support us is to buy the products that support this operation at InfoWarsStore.com. And we've got a lot of specials on right now. We've got a new formulation of the Ultimate Bone Broth that is 50% off at InfoWarsStore.com. We also have a new product, the Ultimate Female Force, which is 50% off. And we have a special just for the listeners of this audience. You can use the code REALNEWS to save 20% on our Wake Up America coffee. That is both the Original Patriot Blend and the Immune Support Blend. You can use the code REALNEWS to save 20% off of Wake Up America Coffee. And so we hope that you can support us. And as we look at what is going on with Michael Cohen, we've got his lawyer, Lanny Davis, who has always been a part of the Clinton crime family, kind of the consigliere, if you will. You know, his role was played by, and the godfather, by Robert Duvall, okay? He's a guy going in and talking sense to them and say, this is the way we can do this. And so he's been making the rounds, and he has some interesting things to say because he's kind of tamping down expectations in an interesting way. He goes on, he says, he admits that Cohen has no evidence that Trump directed him to pay Stormy Daniels. He said it may come down to Cohen's word versus Trump's word. I wonder who people are going to believe. Already, the Democrats are going to believe anybody over President Trump. But I don't think outside of the hardcore partisan Democrats, I don't think the Republicans, and certainly not even independents, are going to find Michael Cohen's word to be very convincing. And a good evidence of this is what we saw Jim Brown, the former running back, NFL, Cleveland Browns and so forth. Many people remember Jim Brown, one of the best running backs that ever played the game. In the Hall of Fame, NFL Hall of Famer, he had this to say about President Trump as he was doing a sports interview. They were trying to push him to criticize President Trump. And I thought it was very interesting the way Jim Brown pushed back on this. Here's the interview.
So, Jim, you've known and you've sat down with many presidents over your life. When this current president gets political with the game that you played at the highest level, the NFL, and comments on this, are you able to comment? Do you sit back and watch this? Are you concerned of the message coming from the White House?
Well, I'll tell you, man, it's very confusing, JT. It's hard to know the good guys and the bad guys. I should be criticizing Trump on every level because he does certain things that calls for criticism. But when I look at television and I see all of these announcers become experts and they're pointing their fingers and they're not doing a doggone thing but pointing their fingers, I find myself really pulling for the president. Now, that will make me very unpopular in the black community, very unpopular with a lot of Americans. But I think that there are certain good things that are coming out of this presidency because we've never seen anything like it. I mean, there's confusion. A lot of people are retiring. A lot of people are giving their opinions. And we have to really dig deep down inside to come up with the right kind of an answer. But here's my answer to all who wants to criticize me or who don't believe that I'm a good American. I believe that I have to work on myself first to be as good a person as I can be, to back up my country in the best way I know how. And the second situation, I should be helpful to those people who need help that don't have life as good as I have it. And if I do those two things, then I think I'm making my contribution.
Wow, that was a great comment by Jim Brown. Going to work hard for myself. When I succeed, I'm going to help people who need help. And he has to kind of apologize for supporting President Trump because this is a guy, JT, the Brick Show, is on Fox Sports Radio, pushing him. You don't like Trump, do you? Say something bad about Trump. And he goes, well, I guess I should be criticizing him because he does some things that call for criticism. But, you know, there's a lot of good things that are happening, he said. See, this is one of the reasons why, people in the black community are seeing things like the 400% increase and small black businesses that are able to grow because and start businesses because of the favorable business climate. It's what JFK said, a rising tide lifts all boats, and they're seeing that effect. They're seeing the effect in terms of price raises, in terms of a climate where they can start a business because of suppressive taxation regulation is being lifted off of them. And the people in the black community are seeing this as well. That's one of the reasons why Trump's popularity has almost doubled, going from 19% to 36% when they say to people, well, what do you think about it? And that's what you're seeing here reflected in what Jim Brown had to say. He said, yeah, it's going to make me very unpopular in the black community. Well, not necessarily. Yeah, it's still a majority of people who don't like President Trump because they're thinking from the political paradigm that has been imposed upon them. They're not thinking about how lowered taxes and lowered regulations are affecting their lives individually. He is thinking about that. He is doing the kinds of things that he needs to do to be successful and to help other people. But he says, I find myself really pulling for the president because there's a lot of good things that are coming out of this presidency. And again, when we look at what Lanny Davis is saying, it's going to come down to Cohen's word versus Trump's word. It's going to come down to the economy, stupid. That's what it's really going to come down to eventually. And as other people point out, even Politico is trying to tamp down the expectations. Remember how we have had certain revelations that have come out, and immediately you got Joy Behar on The View saying, that's it, we got him, he's going to be impeached tomorrow. And then it's like, well, I guess that wasn't it. I guess that really didn't amount to anything. And now the truth is starting to dawn on them. And so you got Politico coming out and saying, well, the Cohen admission really doesn't mean that Trump is guilty, say legal experts. One individual said, the fact that Cohen did something illegal doesn't mean that Trump did something illegal. Cohen said in court on Tuesday that he acted in at Trump's direction, that he violated federal election laws by arranging a payout to Stormy Daniels. But even Politico says, in a very high legal standard that is applied in criminal cases involving alleged campaign finance violation, that means that Trump might not be guilty, even if his lawyer is. See, the point is, this is going to come down again to the election. Impeachment is about the election. Always was, still is, about the election. They will impeach President Trump if they have a majority. They don't need a reason. They just need a majority. Like I said, an impeachment is like an indictment. You know, they have a majority of people and say, we want to throw this charge at him. It still has to be tried in the Senate. And so it comes down to the partisanship that is out there. And they want to attack President Trump's credibility. They want to damage him in the elections. They want to silence us so you don't hear the other side of it. But even as Lanny Davis goes on the various programs, he goes on MSNBC, he goes on CNN and these others talking about this stuff. He was on MSNBC who he says, well, it's going to come down to Cohen's word versus Trump's. He goes on to CNN and he's talking to Anderson Cooper. And Anderson Cooper says, so Michael Cohen doesn't have information that President Trump knew about the Trump Tower meeting with the Russians beforehand or even after? Anderson Cooper asks this to Lanny Davis. Lanny Davis says, no, he does not. And as Daily Caller points out, that seriously damages and undercuts a July 27th CNN report. It wasn't even a month ago. And they had anonymous sources saying that that was true. And now Lanny Davis says, no, that isn't true. Lanny Davis, the lawyer of Michael Cohen, says, no, that's not true. So do you understand why we call CNN fake news? They have an anonymous report, which isn't true. It's been denied now by this Democrat operative, Lanny Davis, and Michael Cohen. Basically, it was an anonymous conspiracy theory from this conspiracy theory website and channel, CNN. Yeah, it was a conspiracy. Oh, Trump conspired about this Trump Tower meeting. No, he didn't. That's your conspiracy theory, and it's a lie. It's fake news. The dossier was fake. He goes on to another interview, and Lanny Davis says, well, you know, that Steele dossier that says that Cohen traveled to Prague during the campaign? He goes, that is totally false. It says he did it 13 times. No, he didn't ever go there. He's never been there in his life. The news from CNN is fake. The dossier from Steele is fake. It's a fake dossier. It's a conspiracy theory. They've been busted. So I guess the question is, why is CNN still allowed on Facebook and YouTube? That's my question.